The buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, and Jace Brown joining you on a Tuesday live from Knoxville, Tennessee. And guys, what a night of NBA playoff basketball we had last night. First off, the Knicks, all of a sudden you look up and the Sixers are losing the game in the last, 30 seconds of the game. That was awesome.
Insane. Yeah.
But that was the appetizer for the main course that happened in Denver last night. A collapse, an incredible game in terms of a basketball fan standpoint, an incredible game. But watching that game, you knew that the Nuggets were hanging around for too long, and they, kind of chipped away, and then the inevitable ended up happening. We'll dive into that game to begin. I've also talked about the transfer portal. A lot of new reports coming out about Tennessee in the portal. We'll break it down later on the hour. And as always, we'll give our best bets. Braves and Marlins set to have a first pitch at 7:20, so stick with us for the next hour and 20 as we get you ready for that game as well. But first things first, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's first things first topic is, did the Lakers miss their chance? With a game-winning buzzer beater, Jamal Murray propelled the Denver Nuggets to a 101-99 victory over the Los Angeles Lakers on Monday night. Murray drained a two-point fadeaway shot over Anthony Davis with the game tied as the clock expired, giving the Nuggets a 2-0 lead in the series. Davis scored a game-high 32 points and added in 11 rebounds, while Denver's Nikola Jokic put up 27 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists in a battle of stars that featured an impressive fourth quarter from LeBron James, who totaled 26 and 12. Denver was down by 20 at one point in this game, mounted a comeback in the second half with Murray scoring 14 points in the fourth quarter after having a rough night through those first three. He finished with 20 points with that clutch basket being the big difference. Los Angeles, which has dropped 10 consecutive games against Denver, host game three on Thursday as they look to win one at home. My takeaways from this game are this. Anthony Davis was playing the way that was expected when they made that trade with New Orleans. That is Anthony Davis. That's a top five Anthony Davis. That's a top five player in the league. Was absolutely taking Jokic every possession in that first half. And Jokic didn't have an answer. Jokic was taken out of that game in that first half as well because of AD's defense on the other side. So AD was getting it done on both sides. D'Angelo Russell, I guess he might have tuned in. Or maybe he brought his girlfriend. One of the suggestions yesterday.
One of your keys to the game, right?
Bring the girlfriend to the game. I don't know if she was there. I don't know if he has one. But he played like it. 7 3-pointers for him. Finished 7 of 11. And in that first half, had 6 of them. He was really big, and that's the kind of performance you needed. Now, LeBron James, I felt like he kind of played a little passive in that first half, trying to get the other guys involved. That's not a bad thing. Just trying to get everyone else going. And D'Angelo Russell was able to get going. Anthony Davis was able to get going. And then that fourth quarter, LeBron had those big moments, the 12-point fourth quarter for him. But outside of those three guys, Rui Hachimura goes 1 of 7. Austin Reeves only puts up 9 points. Everyone else, I think the bench combined for 6 points total.
And it was only Taurean Prince.
It was only Taurean, yeah. Yes, the Lakers played really well and had the Nuggets on their heels. They should have won the game. Go up 20. Didn't get a whole lot of production from your bench, though, and I think that's one of the things that's kind of being swept under the rug. Defensively, the Lakers just looked out of sorts in the second half, and offensively, they looked out of sorts in the second half after Anthony Davis got that fourth foul. Watching the game, and I tweeted it out, I said, this is the turning point. Anthony Davis is taken out. They haven't played the same. And in that fourth quarter, you knew what was coming. It was kind of a slow roll, right? The Nuggets started chipping back away. They cut it to 11, then 9, and then, oh, wait, 6 minutes left in the game, and it's a four-point game. The Lakers can't close this team out. And my takeaway from it is I just think the Nuggets are just that much better because they can get the production from their complementary pieces like Michael Porter Jr., like Reggie Jackson and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They can afford to have Nikola Jokic get taken out of a whole half and Jamal Murray get taken out of three quarters. They can still afford to win games despite bad performances from their best players. The Lakers can't. So I think that loss last night, I don't know how you come back from it. That's not only a loss. They're only down two games. The series isn't over until you lose one at home. But it feels like they're down three games after losing like that on a buzzer beater, being up by 20. I was texting my friends. I was like, wow, I didn't expect the Lakers to, you know, I've been talking about how this was the matchup for them, right? Getting them in the early round. I didn't know if they'd actually put it into fruition, let alone go up 20 on the road. And they let it go. I think this was their opportunity, and they missed on it. Dawson?
This is a brutal loss. I mean, really brutal. And I've been on the end of some of these, so I get it to a degree. And you could kind of see it coming. You know, when the Nuggets tied the game with, I think, a minute and a half to go,
yeah.
I said, boy, this one's going to come down to probably either who has the ball last or who can get the bigger shot. And when it came down to it, LeBron misses a wide-open three. I mean, as open as he's going to get. He drops somebody at the top of the key, and, I mean, that is the most open look you're going to get for a guy in LeBron. Yeah, he's not a notable three-point shooter. He didn't come into the league because of his three-point shooting, but he can certainly shoot it. And he made that same move he always does, a little tuck move that he does before he shoots a three, and I was like, that's in. I was like, it's LeBron James, that's in. When he missed that, I was like, oh, man. Now you give it back to Jamal Murray, and this is a heartbreaker, man. I mean, this is demoralizing. Game one was bad enough. You led by double digits in the first half. You fall apart. You led almost the entire game.
Really? They did.
Really, until about, a minute and a half to go, I think, is when the Nuggets tied the game again for what felt like the first time since the first quarter.
Yeah, the Nuggets didn't have the lead in the game, like, from the 8 minute on in the first quarter. And then, boom, the last play.
I mean, this is the type of game that completely demoralizes a team. I'll talk more about that later. Mm. We'll see what happens to this Lakers team. But, man, I mean, this is the one that completely demoralizes you. Can we name some guys honorary Brick Brothers? Holy cow. I mean, you want to talk about a team that couldn't get a shot to fall. The entire fourth quarter for the Lakers. And Denver, to their credit, tried to give the Lakers opportunities to win this game.
So many.
They tried to give this game away, and the Lakers just could not buy a bucket. A heroic rally late, you know, you make a few buckets late. That felt like the first time the Lakers had consecutive buckets since about, you know, the mid-third quarter.
Yeah.
From then on, they got completely cold, even despite getting gifted opportunities. It could not take advantage. No one could buy a shot. I already talked about LeBron not being able to buy that three either. I mean, that's a microcosm for the whole second half. You just could not buy a shot, and that allowed Denver to just, like you said, claw back into it. It took a long time, but he just allowed him to claw back into it. And then finally, you kind of alluded to it, Denver's just that good. I said Denver will not be denied. Mm-hmm. This is a team that was not going to be denied the opportunity on their own court. Jokic and Murray, despite being down 20, just kind of never went away. Just kept saying, all right, hey, stay in it, stay in it, stay in it. And they stayed in it, and they won the game. Once again, denied LA a chance to steal a game on the road, which is what we said the Lakers needed to do to be in this series.
Yes.
They just chipped away. They hit shots on the other end when it mattered. They got back into the game. They never stopped fighting back, and it paid off. This Denver team is so unbelievably talented, mm-hmm. and they're the defending champions for a reason, and they would not go away.
Yeah, the Lakers being unable to convert late was huge, like you said. I mean, Denver gave the Lakers every single chance in the book to just, you know, overcome that comeback and, you know, hang on for a win, but they just could not do it. They struggled to find the bottom of the bucket. I mean, I know AD was in foul trouble, but that shouldn't be the only reason that you lose that game is because he's off the floor. You know, D'Lo started the game off really well. I think he started 6 of 7 from three, only hit one from then on. But, you know, when you're having a night like that, that should, you know, be enough to, you know, keep your footing and maybe get somebody to rally behind you. But, you know, the other role starters in Rui Hachimura and Austin Reaves Reeves were just absent, it felt like, all night. And like William was saying, LeBron had a slow start, but, you know, had one of those vintage fourth quarters where he's propelling his team, giving them a chance to win. And even though they couldn't do that, his effort was not overshadowed by anything. But the main takeaway here is, you know, Denver has been there and done it. We saw it all last postseason. Every part of adversity they overcame, especially when it came to playing the Lakers. There were games last postseason where they either, you know, got up big and, you know, allowed the Lakers, kind of like Denver did last night, claw back into it, but were able to hang on to a win, or vice versa, almost like last night. So I think it only speaks to just how good Denver is. I mean, Jokic, I mean, you don't put up a stat line like that just for S's and G's, I guess. And, you know, being able to put together a performance like that when, you know, Murray's having an off night before the fourth quarter, keeping your team alive there, just huge. It's such a heartbreaker for the Lakers, because, I mean, you need some momentum, especially rolling into a home environment when, you know, you just lost 9 in a row. You take one back finally, and you're at home again in the playoffs against the number one team, probably the best team, most likely to make the finals out of the West, and you just drop that ball. It's so gut-wrenching.
Just when it looked like Davis had finally figured out Jokic, like the Lakers' offense was going to break through and snap Denver's 9-game winning streak over Los Angeles, the Nuggets snatched the Lakers' hearts and stomped on them. This is by far the worst of the 10 losses. Lakers led by 20 points with 10 minutes remaining in the third quarter. They were outscored 53-31 the rest of the way. The offense stalled. Davis stopped making shots and couldn't stop Jokic. James' crunch time efforts were too little too late, and the Jokic-Murray two-man game started going again. This is the fifth time in these last 10 matchups that the Lakers have led by double digits and lost. It just shows that this team struggles to get – they can't find a way to close a game. If this were the one – I think this had to be the one, that is. And I think the Lakers missed their golden opportunity. You tie this thing up 1-1 going into L.A. Not only do you have this swagger now of, okay, we can beat this team. Now we get them at home. We can take a series lead at home. Now you've got to win back-to-back games at home. Your back's against the wall. This was their opportunity. You knew you had to play perfect. They played perfect in the first half. You saw a little bit of it in the early second half, but as the game went on, it slowly started going in a downward trajectory. You had to play perfect in this series. You had the opportunity. Now your back's against the wall, the same position you were in last year. I'm sure that game three will be close. I think the Lakers, if they get more production from their bench, can win the game. I do. But you had everything go right for you. You had a 20-point lead, and you still couldn't find a way to win. This was a missed opportunity, and I think it was the Lakers' chance. I don't know if they can win this series anymore.
I don't either, because like we said before the series, you had to go get one in Denver. It felt like if you came out of Denver down 2-0, I mean, this was going to be a really tough mountain. It was going to be a tough mountain to climb tied 1-1.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong, but down 2-0, I mean, after leading in both games in Denver especially, it just makes that mountain so hard to climb. The punishment is twofold. The win from your sales that you had since the All-Star break is gone completely.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about the 17-9 record going into the playoffs. Now you go in and beat the Pelicans on the road. You get to this 7 seed. You get to play the Nuggets. You've got a ton of momentum. You're playing really well. Everyone's involved. And then you fall apart in back-to-back games, and your momentum is just completely gone. I feel like we're all questioning, can they even beat the Nuggets? I mean, it's been 10 straight games now. I'm starting to doubt it at this point, because I thought last night was the night. I looked up and they were up by 20. And I was like, well, all right, well, this must be the night. They're going to move back onto L.A., and it's going to be 1-1. And it did not happen. I mean, this is the kind of loss that spirals the series. And now, on the other hand, you've handed Denver all the momentum they need. I mean, this is everything they need. This kind of moment propels a team to win a series and win it quickly. And the last thing you want to give the defending champions in Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray is momentum. And you gave them both momentum in this game. If you steal away even one of these, even if you stole game one and lost game two, you at least have some momentum headed back to L.A. Instead, it might be time for the panic button.
Yeah, it's very much time for that. You know, when you have a 20-point lead just in your hands, and you know, you're already in the second half, you've got 20 minutes left to play, and you can't just hold on to that. You just let it slip right away from you. It's got to be, you know, the most demoralizing feeling in the world, knowing, you know, that's the team that's had your number for so long, and for them to continue just that pulse down on you just because of that. It's got to be so overbearing for that. You know. Like you said, Dawson, you have the chance to grab all the momentum that you need, especially whenever you're going home in front of your home crowd. Now, granted, you know, like we've been talking about, Denver has had success. That they haven't lost to the Lakers in just about, if not more than 500 days at this point. It's absolutely ridiculous. And for you not able to, you know, change that, especially when it's so dire late in the season, it really does feel like you're down 3-0. Even going back home, it feels like a curse almost at this point. The Lakers just, you know, have, you know, I guess Denver or Jokic must have put some, you know, spell on them, unable to overcome that mountain, just because, you know, it's almost uncanny just how horrible things went for the Lakers. Despite all the chances that Denver gave them, it feels like the Lakers are neck deep in water right now. They're just struggling to stay alive. It's bad.
LeBron James ripped the officiating Monday following the game, calling out a third-quarter shooting foul that the NBA's replay center overturned. The Nuggets actually won both of their coaches' challenges last night. Now, one of them was a drive on LeBron James. Jamal Murray swiped down, didn't seem to have any arm contact, looked like he got the ball. That was overturned. Now, the second one was the play in question, the final minute of the third quarter with Los Angeles up by 10. D'Angelo Russell driving in on the layup. Michael Porter Jr. comes down, swipes down, doesn't hit Russell until the ball has already been released. So technically, it's not a foul, but he got whacked in the face with an elbow. They challenged the call. It was overturned in the Nuggets' favor, no call. LeBron said, quote, "I don't understand what's going on in the replay center, to be honest. What the blank do we have a replay center for if it's going like that? It doesn't make sense to me. It makes no sense. It bothers me." You know, I don't like how we're going back to a third quarter play and critiquing that. Look, if you want to be the nerd that says, well, if they got the free throws, it would have been a tie game at the end, right? You could say that, sure. But there were multiple different plays over the course of the final 14 minutes from that moment on that dictated the game. I'm not a fan of them kind of taking this angle of that should have been a foul call. Even D'Angelo Russell headed to Twitter last night to talk about it. I think it's in poor taste. I think it's just them trying to get off some steam. Is it justified for them to go against the replay center here?
I'm going to say no, and you kind of already alluded to it. This specific one call, and we can argue, you know, for a while if it should have been a foul, shouldn't have been a foul, if this should have been overturned. Mm-hmm. This call did not have that much swing in the result of the game. If this was in, you know, the final minute of the fourth quarter,
yeah.
If this is in a two-point game, okay, I can see ripping the replay center because that's a big call. It could change the entire ending of the game. This wasn't that. I mean, it was still a 10-point game at the end of the third quarter, still 12 minutes to play in the game, and still a lot that could happen. I've always kind of hated the whole, well, if they get the free throws, then they lost by two. It would have been tied. Those free throws probably change something that happens a little bit later on in the game.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, if Porter gets that foul, maybe he plays defense a little bit differently later. There's so much different that could have happened there just because of that one call. So I've always kind of hated that. Well, oh, that one foul could have changed so much. I don't think it would have. Even after that no call, the Lakers still led by double digits.
Yeah.
They led by 10. I mean, it's not like this call lost them the lead. I mean, you lead by 10 into the fourth quarter, you just hold on for the final 12 minutes, and this call does not matter. We're not even talking about it today, probably. We're talking about, oh, the Lakers held on to win game two. This loss cannot be pinned on the call. I don't like that he immediately went to the, oh, why do we have a replay center?
Yeah.
Again, if it's the fourth quarter, I get it, and I would get where he's coming from. In this case, because of when the foul occurred, I don't get it.
Yeah, it feels a little, you know – it feels like an excuse at this point, just to throw it back to a third quarter incident, which, I mean, you know, in the playoffs, sure, I think, you know, some calls should be made in the playoffs for better or for worse, regardless of the team. But, you know, like you said, Dawson, you're still up double digits at that point. If you're ahead by that much so late in the game, you still have so much of a chance to close out that game to where, you know, that's like the furthest thing in the back of your mind is that play call right there, or that referee call. So, I mean, when you have the chance to take care of business and, you know, close out that ball game, you know, you can't just, you know, walk back the performance for the rest of the game in that fourth quarter, where you're just demolished pretty much by that point, and Denver takes one from you. You can't backtrack yourself on that and blame an entire game result on one incident that does or does not happen in the third quarter. I think it's a bit of an excuse. It just goes back to, you know, you're up by 20. You can hang on to win that ball game. You're an NBA team. You're an NBA professional. If you take care of business, you really don't got to worry about the fouls.
So I guess kind of putting a button on this game, was game two the death blow for Los Angeles? Because, you know, everything we've talked about so far kind of seems like it is that way. Now, it is important to note, Jared Vanderbilt, Christian Wood, both supposed to return in game three. I think that gives the Lakers a little bit more depth now at center, because last night Anthony Davis goes to the bench with about 7 minutes left in the third with that fourth foul. And you got Rui Hachimura on Jokic. That's not a recipe for success. Jared Vanderbilt, who played well in last year's playoffs as a defender, now he kind of gets thrown in some bad situations offensively because they can just totally leave him open. But both of those guys can play roles. I don't know if they're enough to make this a series. They could win a game. If they win game three, you know, maybe they can find a way to win game four and even this thing up. But right now, I think that's too big of a mental block and a mental recovery to come back on Thursday and be like, okay, hey, we're all good. Come on. You know, they won on a buzzer beater. You were winning by 20 points in that game, and they still found a way to win. LeBron's demeanor last night in the post game was terrible. Anthony Davis, you know, walked off on a question. I mean, obviously, I'm not expecting them to be, like, happy. Like, oh, yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, credit. Yeah, I get it. But I just feel like those are your two leaders of the locker room, and those guys are clearly drained and defeated. I find it very hard to see how this team somehow gets some momentum going unless they win game three.
Yeah, again, this is the kind of loss that's completely demoralizing to a team. Leading for 36 minutes, really – leading for about, 42 minutes for the most part.
Yeah.
And then still finding a way to have your hearts ripped out right at the end of the game on a buzzer beater. I mean, this kind of loss can become fatal to a team in the playoffs. It can sink any hope you have. The Lakers now, you say win one at home. I say they have to win both.
Well,
I
mean, they have to.
If you lose even game four, if you were to lose game four in L.A., you then have to win three straight and two in Denver against a team, by the way, that you only would have won one of the last 11 games against at that point. So, you know, even if you can take it back to Denver 2-2, you only have to win two out of three. If you can steal game five, then you got game six at home. Something crazy like that happens, but man, it's a slim chance. There's a chance, but a slim chance with the momentum you gave Denver, though.
Yeah,
I think it might have been the death blow.
Going down to, adding on to that, going down to a team like Denver, just with how they've been playing all year, how we saw them play last year with the depth that they have, we've talked about a bunch, the deepest team in the West. It does feel sort of like a death sentence. I mean, going down 2-0 with, you know, you're running out of daylight here. The light is at the end of the tunnel, and it's growing right now. And I saw it on DraftKings earlier. Teams that go down 2-0 in series win just 7.3% of the series out there. So, you know, it's going to have to be slim company with you. And it really doesn't feel like, you know, the Lakers having all that momentum snatched away, especially at that last second, is going to be able to build anything that's sustainable, especially against this just rock solid Denver Nuggets squad. There we go.
I think this was the most detrimental loss in LeBron James' playoff career since the 2018 finals in game one. It kind of felt the same way. Now, in that game, it was back and forth. You know, it wasn't like they had a huge lead early on. Mm. You just had J.R. Smith run the wrong way. But I hate to bring that up. But you know, that demeanor last night in the interview was very similar to his reaction after that loss to the Warriors in game one. So, and yeah, to clarify, they have to win both games in Los Angeles. I'm just saying, you know, I find it hard to believe that they're able to win game three. If they win game three, you can maybe find some confidence here and say, okay, yeah, we're playing well at home. Yeah. And again, as I said earlier, a series is never over until a home team loses, right? I mean, I just find it very hard for them to win two in a row after they've lost 10 in a row. You know what I mean? So I think it's a death blow. And I backed this Lakers team since, you know, July when they made all these moves. I thought this was the best equipped they were to beat the Nuggets. You had the opportunity. I think it was stripped from you. It's the death blow for me. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about Tennessee transfer portal madness. Three guys to know about and hear about with some new news regarding the portal when we return here on Overtime.
At First Bank, we're proud of more than 100 years of financial strength. But on game days, our numbers look even better. When they're lighting up a scoreboard printed on a jersey or in bold type on the sports page. We know there's strength in numbers and nothing stronger than the bonds formed around local teams. And the return on this investment? Neighbors coming together again year after year. Bank where community is number one. First Bank. Bank local. Get more team spirit. Member FDIC.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Go ahead, feel your engine. Admire that perfectly installed exhaust. Your vehicle's moving along this freeway like it was made from fresh installs and a whole lot of love. With eBay Motors, you get over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issue. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info, so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D. To save up to 25% off your first year, LifeLock.com. Identity theft protection starts here.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
What's the difference between an ordinary EV and a Mercedes-Benz EV? The feeling. Electric is what gets you there. Mercedes-Benz is what moves you. In ways no other automaker can. Feel the freedom of the superbly versatile 7-seater EQB. Revel in the inspired, customizable comfort of the EQE sedan. Sense the brilliant intelligence of the EQE SUV. Discover the boundless capability of the EQS SUV. And luxuriate in the flagship meets spaceship magnificence of the EQS sedan. Every Mercedes-Benz electric vehicle offers the very latest MBUX voice-activated AI software, as well as remote access to a whole host of functions via the Mercedes Me Connect app. The vehicle's electric, the feeling all Mercedes, the choice all yours. Test drive a Mercedes-Benz electric today at your local dealer or learn more at mbusa.com/EQ.
Planning for spring at Lowe's means big savings on outdoor power equipment. And Lowe's knows nothing feels better than free. Buy one select Ego string trimmer, leaf blower, or mower kit. Get one select 56-volt battery free. That's up to a $299 value. Power through spring with Ego, the number one rated brand in cordless outdoor power. Because Lowe's knows home improvement. Valid through 4-3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Tuesday. We appreciate you listening along with us. Great conversation in the first segment about the Lakers meltdown. Now we head to the college basketball world where Tennessee is experiencing some transfer portal madness. Tennessee's basketball focus early on in the NCAA transfer portal cycle is on the front court. The Vols, after both junior center Jonas Adu and sophomore forward Tobe Awaka enter the portal, are looking to restock the paint. So far, Tennessee has hosted two forwards on visits in Charlotte's Igor Milic and Belmont's Kay Tyson. The Vols also have expressed interest in Ohio State center Felix Akpara, who reportedly entered the NCAA transfer portal on Sunday. Both Milicic and Tyson took official visits to Tennessee last week. Tyson was on a visit to North Carolina over the weekend. Milicic was at Baylor. Milicic has also visited Nebraska. We'll begin with Cade Tyson. North Carolina is seemingly the favorite for this one. He has two crystal balls on 24/7, but he's a 6'7", 210 guy who is a really good shooter from Charlotte, North Carolina. Averaged 16.2 points per game, 5.9 rebounds, and 1.6 assists in 31.6 minutes per game last year at Belmont, starting all 31 games. He's the number 23 overall player in the transfer portal, according to On3 industry rankings. And Tyson has been a guy that we've all had our eyes on for a little bit now. We were able to bring in Darlin Snow Dubar, who was another guy we had our eye on. But Tyson allows you to get three-level scoring at a very high level, especially from the perimeter, where he shot 48% from three last year. That's, you know, NBA levels numbers. You know, Klay Thompson would get ousted by him in a three-point battle these days. But Tyson, I think, would be a huge, huge piece to this Vols team and the starting lineup. After losing Dalton Knecht, a guy that could also score at three levels, this guy in Tyson is a more efficient three-point shooter than Knecht was. And granted, look, yeah, he was at Belmont, but his brother played at Clemson, now plays for the Nuggets. So he's from a family that is familiar with playing at, you know, Power 6 level schools and now in the NBA. Cade Tyson gives the Vols three-point shooting, a three-level scorer, and a go-to guy like you had in Dalton Knecht. And that's why I think he should be one of the number one guys the Vols are hammering on in the portal. What do you think Kay Tyson gives the Vols?
Well, you already mentioned the most notable thing. That's an electric shooting, electric shooting player. You want a Dalton Knecht replacement. I know you're never going to be able to replace, you know, what he gave this team, but he's going to fit that mold. He shoots it well from all over the floor. You mentioned his percentage from three. That's something that Tennessee is going to be missing now that Knecht and really a couple of other sharpshooters. You know, Vescovy leaves, Josiah Jordan-James leaves, a couple of your three-point guys have left. You're going to need to fill that void. Tyson will be able to do that for you and give you a really good pure score. Different looks on offense, very versatile in the way he can score.
Yes.
You know, he can shoot on the move. He can shoot off a handoff, off the dribble, through screens, on top of defenders. He could score a number of different ways. And that's going to be something, again, Dalton Knecht could do that. So you're going to need somebody that can do that, that can find different ways to score, that can get you a bucket in any kind of situation. And Tennessee kind of likes to play this offense sometimes. Run a high pick, get a guy open. How many times do we see Adu come to the top, set a pick, and Knecht shoot a three off the screen? So if you can do that again and get a guy that can shoot it with the ball in his hands in that kind of scenario, that's going to be massive. And being able to move him around, it's going to benefit the entire offense and really help things flow. And then a secondary thing, yeah, scoring's going to pop out. His rebounding is good too.
Yes.
Six rebounds a game is exactly what the doctor ordered for Tennessee because they struggled so badly with it at times last year. You need to replace that production. You're going to miss from Jonas Adu. You're going to miss from Tobe Awaka. You're going to miss from a couple of those guys that are leaving, like Josiah Jordan-James, like Dalton Knecht. You're going to miss that rebounding production. You need to replace that. And a guy that, I mean, can shoot the three and go get you six rebounds a game?
Yeah,
I'll take that all day.
Absolutely. I think you guys hit on it. Being able to score at such a high clip from, you know, anywhere on the court, I think especially from three is huge. But also watching some of his tape, he likes to attack the rim a little bit too. He likes to get inside on the offensive side. and is able to, you know, add that facet to his game. I think that's another thing. Like y'all have said, he's great up, great in the spot up shooting. You know, just catch a pass, throw it up. He's very efficient from that. I think his presence on the offensive end, to go along with the defensive prowess on the rebounding side of things, I think it can really open up things for that Tennessee offense, because, you know, last year we were so used to seeing, we're either going to see Jonas Adu catch it and, you know, turn around jumper from inside or maybe around the rim, and we'll see, you know, some picks up around the perimeter, and somebody's going to catch an open three at some point. But, you know, him being able to do those things as well, and you're bringing in a guy like Dubar who's going to really stretch the floor at that four spot as well, I think it opens up a bunch of lanes for a bunch of different guys to get involved on the offensive side as well.
Another guy we want to highlight is 6'10", 224-pound Igor Milicic from Croatia, ranked the number 72 overall player in the portal. Would give the Vols more size at that four position with the ability to step out and shoot. Averaged 12.8 points and 8.5 rebounds this season at Charlotte, shooting 48.7% from the field, 37.6% from the three-point line. Started his career at Virginia before transferring to Charlotte after the 2021-2022 season. Entered the transfer portal in late March. Milicic is interesting because he's a little bit different than what you've seen at Tennessee. Tennessee historically, or I guess since Rick Barnes has been here, has not kind of had this 6'10 modern day four that can go out and shoot the 3-point ball at an effective percentage. Shot 42.6% from the corner three spot. And he's a little bit of an athlete as well. Has a couple of nice dunks in his package as well. So I think he's a good wrinkle in your disposal on your bench. I don't think he's a starter on this team, but he's a guy that can come off the bench, space the floor. It's what college basketball is now. It's really what basketball is now. You can thank Steph Curry. You know, spacing and three-point shooting, Milicic allows you to play that way. And this season with Dawn Connect and this year's squad, you saw a little bit of a change in pace and a change of style from Tennessee, and Milicic would help kind of further that. Now you've got bigs that can stretch the floor and shoot threes. I think he would offer that. It's not something we've seen before, but I do think he could be a good fit.
Yeah, in terms of size, you're getting similar to what you were getting in a Josiah Jordan James, a little bit taller than him.
Yeah.
Similar size to Jonas Adu, actually. 6'10", 225, Adu, 6'11", 235. So not a whole lot different in terms of size. You know, kind of be interesting to see where he would slot in. I imagine it would be off the bench to take that four spot, would be my guess. You know, maybe you start to move some guys around. Maybe you find some different combinations. Move Dubar to the three and play big. I don't know what you do there. We'll have to see. You know, if he were to come to town, what Barnes would decide to do. He does fit that kind of offensive finesse mindset that Barnes likes in bigger players. I know he's not going to be playing the center, but you know, we talk about how you know. Barnes likes guys like Adu that are more finesse. They're going to shoot the ball from the mid-range. They're more willing to take jump shots. That's kind of what you're getting in Milicic, actually, on a whole different level, considering how well he can shoot the three.
Right.
He gives you a ton more flexibility offensively. I mean, a ton more. You know, to be able to shoot it from different places on the court, provide another offensive weapon, which you can't ever use enough offensive weapons these days in modern college basketball.
Yeah.
And also, it gives you a wealth of size at that position. I mean, because at this point now you got Dubar at the four, you'd have Milicic at the four as well. Both guys that are, you know, well over 6'7", that'd be really nice to have as well, wealth of size down there to be able to play a little bit bigger, because we're used to Tennessee not really playing small ball, but smaller, I would say, at most of these positions. You could try some different combinations and really play with some nice size as well all over the floor.
Yeah, I think one thing, you know, I think it could be a good fit. It really, like y'all have said, it brings a non-traditional look, especially at the four, whenever, you know, you get a guy out there that's 6'10", that can shoot the three at 38%. I think that's something, like you said, William, that this offense for Tennessee and pretty much just under Rick Barnes in general has been missing outside of, you know, a rare Kevin Durant gem that you find there. So I think him being able to, you know, stretch the floor on the offensive end is pretty big. I think it changes the pace pace, like you were saying, Dawson. It opens up a lot of different options that you can roll with personnel-wise. I think pairing him, you know, maybe at the four with Estrella at the five and Dubar at the three, you can really play some bully ball at that point if you want to. Get a lot of different options on the outside as well as the inside. I think it opens up there, up right there as well. Like y'all have hit on, not really a starter role for him. I'm not sure. I don't think at all he'll be able to pass up Dubar for that four hole, I should say. And you know, like you said, he's sort of, you know, not the tankiest guy on the court, not the biggest guy, but still being able to, you know, flex to that stretch four. We're able to stretch out the defense, find some lanes on the inside. I think it's a positive fit for the Vols.
All right, the final guy I want to touch on is Akpara from Ohio State. Has ties to the state of Tennessee after attending Hamilton Heights Christian Academy in Chattanooga before finishing his prep career at Link Academy in Missouri. He was a four-star prospect ranked number 69 overall in the class of 2022, targeted heavily by the Vols at the time. He was ranked number 9 among centers and number 4 overall in the state of Missouri. Akpara averaged 6.6 points, 6.4 rebounds, and 2.4 blocks this past season, averaged 5.3 points and 5.0 rebounds over the last 2 years. Started 34 out of the 35 games for the Buckeyes this year, averaging about 24 minutes a night. Not the best shooter or scorer, but did shoot 58.6% from the field in 70 games with the Buckeyes. What you're getting from Akpara is a defensive guy, kind of one of those utility knives, right? A guy that you can bring in if you're facing a big, like we saw this year with Zach Edey, Armando Baycott, Tolu Smith, BJ Mack, right? When you're facing against a couple of these really talented bigs, you now have a guy in Akpara who's a really good defensive center, really good size, good weight. I think he would solve the problem of kind of missing that bruiser that we missed with Juroš Plašević this past year. So Akpara provides that. Not going to get too much offensively from him, but that's why you have J.P. Estrella. And we talked to Justin Ganey last week. He was very complimentary of Estrella and what he can do in his future here at Tennessee. So I think they're just trying to find a guy that, okay, we've got a matchup with a really good center. Who can we throw at him that'll knock him off their game? I think that's Akpara, and that's what I think he would solve for this Tennessee team.
Biggest thing for me is filling the experience void down low. Estrella only going to be a sophomore. You lose Awaka, who's got experience down there. You lose Adu, who's got a ton of experience down there. Akpara, 2 years in college basketball, a significant amount of starting experience, which Estrella doesn't have. So, I mean, you get a mentor for Estrella. Again, you know, after those guys have departed, they've already mentored him a little bit. You get another guy that can come in and say, okay, here's how I approach this. Here's how I take on this situation. But also a guy that's just been in college basketball before.
Sure.
He can be that sound guy to go out there, and you know he's going to do well because he's been in this spot before where he's been the starter at that position and fill that void that Adu has left behind of experience at the center position. You'd be set at center again. You lose two in the portal, you go out and get one, all of a sudden you've got him and you've got Estrella. I mean, you're pretty well set. You'd like to probably have three, I guess, guys down there. Obviously, we've heard all the discussion going on whether or not Tobey Awaka is going to come back, whether he's going to leave for sure. Especially, you're really set if he comes back and you can land Akpara. That would be massive. You'd be right back set at center again. So that would be huge as well. And then good defense and rebounding. Look, you're not going to get the biggest offensive punch from this guy. We know that. But you're not getting him for that. You lost a defensive presence in Jonas Adu when he went to the portal.
Yeah.
On the SEC all-defensive team. I mean, you lose the scoring punch that he had. But I think the more important thing you lost from him is his defensive presence down low. You need to replace that, and Akpara is a perfect guy to replace in that spot. A shot-blocking center that can go and grab you some rebounds. You need that kind of presence, and you could replace it with Akpara.
Yeah,
the biggest thing for me was that defensive presence, just him being able to, you know, two and a half blocks is no slouch. I know Adu averaged just about the same this season, so being able to fill that void on the defensive end is going to be huge. Kind of feels like he's one of those spark plug guys off the bench that I think, you know, on the defensive end at least, he kind of feels that, you know, Jemai Meshack sort of feel to it. Just being such a big difference maker on that end of the court could be something that the Vols could utilize. And I also think he sort of steps into that rebounding mindset, like you were saying, Dawson, that Tennessee was used to using Tobe Awaka as. I mean, every time Awaka went in there, it felt like he's grabbing 6-7 boards, like two or three of them being on the offensive end, and really giving the other guys a chance to, you know, excel on the offensive end. So I think him being able to be a big body download, to be able to assert himself on the defensive end or the offensive end in the post is going to be big. And, you know, it feels like Tennessee has been missing Euros, like you said, being sort of, you know, a mindset guy more than anything, being a guy to bring in to stifle some of the more talented bigs and more physical bigs. I think even though, you know, he's about the size of Awaka, about 6'11", 235 or so, I think the mindset that he's going to bring, not being so much a finesse player, is really going to build for this defensive end of Tennessee.
So let's now do a little exercise here in order of who you want. List your top three out of this group. I'll begin with Cade Tyson. I think he's a guy that is a guy that changes the dynamic of your team, changes the trajectory of your team. That's how good he is offensively. Three-level score, efficient, can get it done. He would be my number one. My number two would be Akpara from Ohio State. This is a need on this team. Not just a want, it's a need. You've got to have a guy defensively that can stop the bigs that you're going to face in the SEC, especially the talented ones. You missed that this last year. Not a finesse guy. This is a bruiser that gets it done defensively. Akpara would be two. Three for me would be Milicic. I like him. I don't love him. But, you know, he offers you something that you haven't really seen before, which could open up the offense, and that's three-point shooting and the ability to stretch the floor. So Tyson, Akpara, Milicic for me.
It's the same for me. Tyson is one, again, the kind of, you know, elite-level scorer that could completely change the way this team looks next year in terms of who's going to take the most shots, who's going to get the most volume. This would be that kind of guy if you can land him. And, you know, he'd be your number one shooter, just like Dalton Knecht was. And just like Kinect could be the piece to get you to that next level and maybe get you closer to the finish line.
Sure.
In terms of where you want to be in the SEC, where you want to be in the national tournament. Mm. So Cade Tyson for me is number one. I'm going with Akpara at two as well. Again, I think I would have put him at three until you lost two centers to the transfer portal.
Yeah.
This is just now this is a glaring need on this team. I love JP Estrella. I think he's going to be excellent in the future. That time is not now. So you need a guy that's going to be able to go in there and kind of balance with him a little bit, be that more defensive punch. You need to replace the defensive production of AD. We just talked about that, and Akpara would be a perfect way to do that. So he's at two for me as well. And then Milicic is at three. I think it's also because we just brought in Darlin Stone-Dubar.
Yeah.
And it feels like they're not really the same player, but you're getting, you know, production from Dubar as well. So Milicic is no longer we need to go land this guy. Yeah. I would almost rather go get Cade Tyson. Like if we had to pick, I would rather have Cade Tyson.
Too, yes.
And so it's nothing against him, but this need's already been dealt with, in my opinion. Yeah. I feel like the other two are more important and more guys that can have a bigger impact now.
Yeah. I'll be different here just to be devil's advocate. I'll throw Akpara at one. I think his role is filling that, you know, Tobe Awaka, just big guy off the bench that can rebound, that can play defense, and be strong-willed against more talented big men is going to be huge because, I mean, you look back at that Texas game in the round of 32, Tennessee does not win that game without Tobe Awaka coming in and being able to, you know, give Dylan Disu, who's an undersized big, a different look and him being able to be a little bit more physical, not get run around. I think that's something that Akpara can bring. I think that's just a presence that's needed for this team. Like you said, losing two pivotal pieces in that center room and being able to provide such a spark off the bench with him would be huge. Number two is Tyson. I think, you know, for a number one scorer, this is sort of a guy that you want to look to. It feels sort of like that Dubar move was sort of almost you know, to replace Kinect just with, you know, his clip from the outside and his ability to stretch the floor being a 6'8 guy. But you really can't pass up on 17 points a game and being able to score from three levels just like Dubar. If you can have the more guys like that, the better. So I think Tyson would be more appealing than Milicic over at the three. Again, I think he brings an interesting look. It's not one that Rick Barnes has usually been able to utilize too much because he really hasn't had it. But beyond that, he is an intriguing prospect, but, you know, he's not going to be able to overpower anybody on the inside game, which feels like y'all have said, is the biggest question mark for this team right now.
All right, and when we return, we'll give our best bets of the night. Stay right here on Overtime.
When it's past high noon, it's time for a vodka soda made with a vodka you've actually heard of. I'm talking White Claw vodka soda made with White Claw premium vodka. J.B. Smoove only drinks vodka soda made with the world's smoothest vodka.
And you can too. Pick you up a bottle of the Triple Wave filtered vodka that's been distilled 5 times. White Claw premium vodka comes in 4 flavors. Black cherry, mango, pineapple, and just vodka. You haven't had vodka like this. No one has. White Claw premium vodka. Please drink responsibly.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbl Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only...
Citizens National Bank, the National Bank.
Life is more fun with a Good Life checking account, offering extra benefits including bank travel. Join us for a trip to Mackinac Island for a stay at the beautiful Grand Hotel. Travel with us to southern Utah to witness the enormous, colorful, and unusual rock formations. Or join us on one of our many day trips. We're always on the go.
Citizens National Bank. Banking never felt so good.
Member FDIC.
Looking for a luxury RV getaway? Then come see Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Just imagine a personal oasis on the French Broad River with outstanding amenities just minutes from the Great Smoky Mountains. Enjoy the quiet, private setting on sites offering unexpected beauty and tranquility. Unplug from everyday life and plug in to the serenity of life on the river, big mountain skies, and bucket list sunsets at Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Serenity in the heart of it all. Visit tworiversrvresort.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbl Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumbl crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville, 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
Who's ready to watch your Southern League champs take the field for a fantastic 2024 season? All season long, your favorite nights are back, like Star Wars, Margaritaville, 4th of July, UT Night, and so much more. And don't forget, awesome daily promotions too, like All You Can Eat Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, Summer Fireworks Series, and Family Fun Day Sunday. Get your tickets for your favorite night now at SmokiesBaseball.com.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as $1 a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's getethos.com.
Blackford Veterinary Surgery Referral specializes in surgeries not regularly performed by your pet's general veterinarian and currently accepts referrals from vets all across the country. With their newly renovated state-of-the-art surgery center and their highly trained staff, clients can rely on professional and thorough care. If your vet says that your pet needs surgery or rehabilitation, ask for a referral to Blackford Vet and let them get your best friend back on its feet. Located conveniently in West Knoxville. For more information, visit BlackfordVetSurgery.com.
All right, back here on Overtime, time for our best bets of the night. Real quick here, I'll begin with Suns plus three, taking on the Timberwolves tonight. Grayson Allen seems to be ready to go tonight as well. Look, game one was a little bit of an outlier in my opinion. Timberwolves hit a plethora of really contested tough shots. Suns also shot just 42.9% at the rim. I look for the Suns to get back in the rhythm of things tonight and be able to pull out a win tonight on the road against the Timberwolves. I'll take the plus three. Suns plus three for me.
Yeah, I'm calling an audible. I had T-Wolves written down as soon as I saw Grayson Allen get off the bus and not limp on that right ankle and saw him shoot around. I'm all of a sudden very fired up. So give me my Suns at plus 5.5 is what I found him at. Mm. So, I mean, if you can find him at three, that's not bad. If you can find him at 5.5, hammer that on the road tonight. This group's not going to lose two games in a row in the playoffs. Too experienced, too much of a really talented group. I mean, this big three, they're not going to let that happen again. I don't know if they win the game. They make this one scrappy at the very least. I like Suns plus 5.5.
Found Bucks minus one against the Pacers. I mean, we saw what playoff Dame was able to do game one. I know we didn't really score too much outside of that first half, but it really felt magical in that first game. But, you know, Middleton and Portis both stepped up big time. I think they're going to step up again. I mean, the Pacers, that young core really doesn't have too much playoff experience outside of Pascal Siakam. So I think the Bucks are going to be able to take it at home once again. Again, I'm just going to try and back these home teams so far.
I'm going to go the other way. Pacers plus one. Look, the Pacers also played really poorly in that first game. They shot 20% from three, and they were mostly catch-and-shoot open shots. I've never been one to overreact to game one. I still think the Pacers are the better team. I'll take them again here tonight.
Fought with myself, but I like Bucks minus 1.5. It's too small a spread for me. With all the home teams winning so far, I like the Bucks to at least skate by in this one. Lillard proved me wrong, showed that maybe the clock has not quite struck midnight on Dame time yet, at least not in the first half of game one anyway. If he can even relatively get close to that again, I feel like they'll beat a young Pacers team. The Pacers are going to put up a fight when they get back to Indiana, but it's so hard to win on the road in the playoffs, so I like Milwaukee at minus 1.5.
I'm going to take the Clippers minus 1.5 against the Mavs. They play lights out with you know, Harden playing as well as he has in the playoffs. It feels like ever. You know, Kawhi's still a game-time decision right now, and we know
he's
what
he's going tonight.
Going tonight, said, okay, yeah. Even better. I'll ride on that as well. I mean, Luka and Kyrie could only do so much. Didn't really get too much production from their role players. I feel like it could spell pretty bad for the Mavs going down by two games tonight.
I'm gonna go the other side here again. I'm taking Dallas plus 1.5 again. James Harden, he does not do this in the playoffs very often. Really good performance from him in game one. I do not expect him to have that same production tonight. Dallas also had 30 points going in? What was it? 30 points going in halftime?
Something ridiculous.
Not a lot.
They did not look. They're not going to play that badly again either. And they're one of the best road teams against the spread this season. I'm back in the Mavericks here plus 1.5.
Clips minus 1.5 because Kawhi Leonard will play tonight. I think that's going to pay dividends. I don't think the Mavericks are going to get blown out by any means. I like the Clippers here in game two because it's Kawhi in the playoffs. He's going to show up and show out now that he's back in the lineup for L.A. I like the Clippers at minus 1.5.
All right, those are our best bets of the night. We'll see you on the other side with in the news with Dawson Wise. Also, Braves and Marlins set to have a first pitch at 7:20. Stay right here on Overtime.